22nd, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the cold suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. Follow some of the interesting links, usually associated with or somewhat compatible with the ideas of the guest for that day. I have linked a movie today, and I recommend that everyone watch it. Very, very interesting. Alternatively, those links may relate to a current piece of legislation or event that may be of interest. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1@yahoo.com. I do not access my regular email during the program, so if you ask questions and you don't email them to spingola1@yahoo.com, I will not get them until after the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Carl Radl. That's R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Okay, Carl, welcome to the program.
I'm here as always.
Good. How are you this morning?
Oh, same old, same old. Woke up. It's cold. Very, very cold.
Yes, it is cold here. We actually have a blanket of snow today. Yesterday, there wasn't any snow at all. So the weather's very different this year.
Yes, it's been slightly colder than usual. Right. Especially around here. Topic for today is the Abbey processor scandal of 2008. I don't know if everyone remembers the postal raid of May 2008, but in many ways they should, because it's one of the perhaps a key turning point in American history in some respects. The May 2008 ICE raid on the kosher slaughterhouse and meatpacking plant in Postville, Ohio, it was what we may call a watershed moment in the history of American Jewry. It was, in some respects, the first and so far the only modern large-scale raid of a Jewish corporation accused of importing large numbers of illegal immigrants into the USA. If that was just it alone, that would be a significant point. However, the scale of the agri-processor scandal, and it's still going on, even 4 years after the event, we recently had an attempt by the main character, Shlomo Rubashkin, to slip bail and go to Israel. He's also been repeatedly challenging rulings, claiming bias, bias and anti-Semitic conspiracy against him. You name it, he's claimed it. And he has some fairly significant supporters, plus a lot of money. And by a lot of money, I mean a lot of money. His personal wealth, we don't really know. That's because he was eventually convicted on, just this alone, 86 counts of bank fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud, and time laundering.
Oh, my. All righty. We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest today, Carl Radl. Stay tuned.
Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to SantaBarbaraBells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. SantaBarbaraBells.com.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are. Incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256 or go to zerodebtguaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
And my guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And I think probably a lot of people aren't even aware of this agriprocessors scandals 2008. Usually when we think of 2008, we think of the bank bailouts. But this might be even more significant.
Yes, in some ways it was. I mean, the average bank the bank bailouts cost the US taxpayer a lot more money than the agriprocessors scandal did. But the agriprocessors scandal basically touched every home in America. And it is kind of perhaps sad that there's only been one book written on the subject of the agriprocessors scandal. And that was written by two Marxists and a Hasidic Jew who bend over backwards to try and argue that it wasn't the fault of the Jews. It's quite a bizarre book. It's called Postville USA, Surviving Diversity in Small Town America by Mark Gray, Michelle Devlin, and Aaron Goldsmith, published in 2009. It's worth mentioning that agriprocessors, when the ICE raid happened in May 2008, which is before, of course, the entire financial scandal broke, when the ICE raid happened, they found that 389 individuals at the agriprocessors plant were illegal immigrants. And further to that, they had falsified their documentation. And of these, 29 were found to be children. So they knowingly employed children, broken child labor laws. In 2006, the agriprocessors plant had dumped a large amount of effluent, so basically untreated industrial waste, into host-built nearby rivers and caused all sorts of problems. And the USDA, the U.S. government fined them $500,000.
That's all?
That's all. Yeah, that's all. It doesn't stop there, though, because in 2006, about that same time, which I have to quickly look it up because I've forgotten the name of the town, but in 2006, at the same time, the Rubishkin family happened to open another kosher plant in Pine Ridge, in the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in Nebraska. And guess what the governor of Nebraska
Pine
gave?
Ridge? I think Pine Ridge is in South Dakota. But it's just real close to the Nebraska line.
Oh, sorry. My source is wrong then. But yes, it was basically the governor of Borden gave the Rubishkins $500,000, which was then used to pay the government. Really wasn't a fine at all. Bear in mind that when the Hadassim set up in Postville in 1987, as I recall, the Postville Council gave them $200,000 to set up there. When you then account for the fact that by 2007 they were making $250 million a year.
Oh my goodness.
And, yeah. Then you can kind of see that this is just chicken feed, really, compared to what they were finding them. In the end, they find Shlomo Rubishkin only $27 million. I mean, that's nothing, really, is it? Compared to if you're making that much money, you're not really going to care about $27 million. What is perhaps some of the worst thing about the postal scandal was that it was in essence covered up by, as you say, the bank situation. And that so little has been written on it. There's only one book, and there's one previous book written by a Jew named Stephen Bloom, in 2001. Quite a famous book. Just trying to recall what it's called on top of my head. Oh, sorry. It's called Postville: A Clash of Cultures in Heartland America. It was subject to a documentary of all things. It's quite an interesting book. It's very journalistic, but it has quite a lot of good, useful anecdotes in it. I would say that the Gray, Devlin and Goldsmith book is filled with absolute howlers and misdirection at every turn. For example, you would never think that Gray and Devlin had encountered a Hasid. They don't even seem to know what Hasid didn't believe, or perhaps are being ignorant by choice. I'm not really sure. For example, they seem to believe that Hasidim is just a religion, you know, just a strong religion. Anyone can become a Hasidim. There's no problem there, according to them. They think that any idea that the Jews, as they like to call it, rule Postville is absurd. And they often spend parts of their book attacking people like us, saying that we're basically fuddy-duddies who don't understand anything, and we're just opposing the revolution, pretty much, would be the best way. And the worst thing, of course, they're both tenured academics at the University of Iowa.
Amazing. And so it's a book to distract everybody and project all of what they were doing onto us, the anti-Semitics in the world, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And it also argues at length that the U.S. government was a conspiracy against illegal immigrants, and it was a capitalism trying to expose, trying to sort of force off the problem of its own, you know, force away its issue and sort of pretend that illegals are a problem and they're not part, that they weren't integrating and what have you.
Did they mention the children?
The children? No. Strange that, isn't it?
Yeah.
where Gray and Devlin are writing from is a very specific position that they themselves are tied to. Which is very simply that the agri process, the kind of Postville, was seen by the far left, particularly in the academic community, as being a real success story for integration, for multiculturalism in the in what you might call the boondocks, you know, the backwards of America. For a long time. I've studied their publications and histories as well. They've argued that that Postville was a great, was the great example that would lead America forward and provided the empirical evidence that multiculturalism could work. Indeed, you get, there's a beautiful couple of pages right at the end of their book where all three authors try and argue that the experiment's not dead, that that we should really endorse multiculturalism. It's all fine, and everyone in Postal got along. Nothing could be further from the truth, I'm afraid. It's worth mentioning, worth going into some of the background as to who the Rubashkins were and also what they did to Postville. Now, as I've already implicated, the Rubashkin family is from the ultra-Orthodox Lubavitch Chabad. Now, I'm sure everyone's heard of the Lubavitch Chabad. They're the most famous of all the Chabad sects. So they're basically Hasidim who have really called their own kind of Jewish outreach going on. They're not the most, they are, as you might say, ultra-conservatives, also fairly radical in their views on who is a Jew, in that they have adopted possibly the strongest definition outside of biology that you possibly could, i.e., if you were to be part of the Kohanim or priestly class in the Lubavitch, you have to have a Jewish mother and a Jewish father of the Kohanim, rather than the normal system, which is that rather than the mother passing on the Jewish status with a Kohanim father, the Kohanim father does. So they're kind of combining both traditions there. I'll be quoting from some of their a couple of their books in a minute, because I think it's worth quoting their own kind of language to show how stupid Gray Devlin and Graham Devlin are.
Right.
Further, it's just to say that the multicultural diversification that was initiated basically directly by the Rubashkins, who wanted cheap labour rather than their local workforce. And they also brought in a very large number, 300 to be precise, of Hasidic families and Jews to Postville. Now, this is in a town which was some 1,500 people in 1980 and only went up to 2,300 in 2000. So you not took you, so bringing in 300 Jews is a huge step. And it wasn't just Lubavitchers, there were other sects invited. For example, there were members of the Satmar Chabad, so different Chabadniks were brought in order to be ritual slaughter with Shoshet or plant management or cattle inspectors.
What was the population of this town before all of this occurred?
1,500.
Oh my, 300, so 300
Jews turn up, yeah. There's a lot of Jews.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah. Interesting little statistic that Postville, to this day, has the highest per capita number of rabbis to its population in the USA. That's more than Brooklyn, more than Crown Heights. And it's quite amazing, really, that this little town acquired. It's even got its own shul. It's got a shul, a yeshiva. So basically all the Jews, a lot of the Jews in Brooklyn or in Crown Heights will send their sons to Postville in order to be taught Torah, to be taught Talmud, so that they don't get distracted by all these, all these shiksas walking around. Can't
sure.
have that.
Now,
can't
sure. Now, did they do, when they set up a plant in Pine Ridge, did they also import a lot of Jews there?
Because it was kosher, it's kashrut, so therefore the only people, and it's kashrut, but it's also, matter-of-factly, it's glatt kashrut. Now that, as people may not appreciate, is something altogether different. There's kashrut, and then there is glatt kashrut. So kashrut is a system of, it's sort of halakha, of halakhic, saying it is permitted, it's not permitted, and so it's a fairly complex system as is. For example, you have to cut the animal's neck with a silver knife with no nicks in it, no, and it can't spill blood in a certain way, it has to go through smoothly, it's not an easy process by any means. You have to have complete separation of meat and milk, you can't have certain types of meat together, it's very complicated, basically.
Yikes. Alrighty, we will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Right now, food is everywhere. If you want it, you can buy it. For now. When the coming crisis occurs, how will you feed your family? Will healthy nutrition be available? The answer is probably no. Jeff Lawton will show you how to survive the coming crisis in an abundant way with permaculture. Jeff Lawton is a permaculture designer, teacher, and consultant who has shown people like you, people in 35 countries around the world, people who want to know what they can do to survive the crisis that they see approaching. There is an absolutely free video online that will help you discover how to survive by giving you step-by-step instructions in establishing food forests that will help you become survival confident. Log on to jefflawton.org right now. This free video will only be available for a limited time. That's jefflawton.org. G-E-O-F-F-L-A-W-T-O-N.org. Survival is not optional. Visit jefflawton.org today.
For many years, coffee lovers have learned that for the freshest coffee, you need to roast your own beans. Unfortunately, that usually meant paying more per pound for coffee than you could get it at the local grocery. Those wanting to store rich coffee for long-term use have been frustrated with the lack of quality coffee available with a long shelf life. So we usually settle for brand name coffee, either ground or instant. But now, we have another solution. Canned green coffee beans. Green coffee beans have not been roasted. And since the bean is not cracked yet, the shelf life is many years longer than roasted or ground coffee. Due to the way it's packed, you can expect these to stay fresh for 20 plus years. Go to campingsurvival.com to order your canned green coffee beans. A single can is only $11.94. Order online today at campingsurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. Campingsurvival.com. Campingsurvival.com.
Extend your life with
Extendivite. Extendivite is a 7-herb heart protection cocktail designed to support cardiovascular health, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels. February is Heart Month, and we at Heart Drop 2000 are having our Heart Month sale with prices from 6 years ago. Starting now until February 28th, you can purchase a 4-month supply of either capsules or liquid for only $125, including shipping and handling, to help you help yourself. So call now to take advantage of this one-time offer. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Radl. That's R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And earlier you mentioned Pine Ridge. Did they also import a lot of Jews to go to that area to live?
They did. They would have had to, you see, because as I said, part of the interest, part of the notion is it's glatt kosher, it's kosher. Part of the difference and what people get people confused about kosher is because there are different standards with different sets. Now, as I said, these are ultra-Orthodox Jews. And there's something they don't often tell you, certainly that people who attack what we call the kosher food tax idea, don't often realize that one of the prerequisites of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox kashrut is that every stage must be prepared by a Jew. Because if a non-Jew is preparing something, what the Halakha says is very, very clear, that because a Jew has, in quotes, an evil nature, and sorry, a non-Jew has an evil nature, but cannot control themselves in the same way that a Jew can, and doesn't have as much evil in them, by nature of being Jewish, then they're very likely to do something to the food that will make the food non-kosher, therefore will hurt the Jew's spirituality and sort of course cause them problems in the eyes of Hashem. What they had to do is they had to have Jews at all times looking at what the non-Jews were doing to make sure the non-Jews are behaving themselves. And also, fundamentally, if they are producing glatt kosher, it has to be only produced by Jews. As I said, the difference between glatt and kosher is that glatt is the next step up. It is the kosher of koshers. It is where a Jew, for example, in Shishta, Shochet will look at, will slice the cow, slice the cow's neck off and take out the lungs and have to look at, inspect them. And but in normal kosher, they'll just look at them and see if there are any infections on the outside. In Glatt, for example, what they do, they don't just stop there. They actually put them onto a compressed air cylinder and they blow them up and then they inspect them, as a full thing to make sure that they are completely free of any imperfection, no matter how small. The idea behind this is that it's supposed to make the consumer utterly sure that this is kosher meat, that nothing has slipped through in the process. Now, you might immediately wonder why a plant that specializes in glatt kosher, in particular, has a large number of non-Jewish employees, given what I've just said about the halakha. The reason for that is very, very simple. It's because most of the, shall we say, the income from the plant didn't come from the kosher trade. It came from the non-kosher trade, to be precise. 70%, according to Gray, Devlin and Goldsmith. Compare that to the fact that the Agri composed 70% of the US kosher meat market and 40% of the US kosher poultry market, and you get some idea of just how big the sort of the scale of this operation was, and how big and how much it would have materially affected everyone, most people in the USA in some form or another, in terms of the meat that they bought from this plant. It was usually sold as in quotes, organic or natural meat on the premise, whatever, I don't understand how this got through, advertising regulators, that it was organic and natural because, the Jews did, ritually sacrificed it, so, it's a bit of a weird one. But it's not within the realms of impossibility that the reason it got sold as that is because, the Lubishkins and agri-processors actually bribed people. And the interesting thing about it is that we know they did. For example, we know that they bribed government inspectors of the plants, leading to a significant internal investigation at the USDA, because the USDA had a second team go to AgProcess just to check on their inspectors to make sure they were doing it. It was a surprise inspection, and they found their inspectors were sitting up and playing video games after having been paid a large amount of money by the Lubishkins to turn a blind eye to what's going on at the plant. And we also know that the agri-processors specialised in intimidating suppliers and attempting to build a cartel by using their financial muscle with their suppliers, so the farmers and so on, the local suppliers who didn't have anyone else on their books, kind of thing, to basically corner the market and set what prices they liked and force their competition out of business. To give
and
some
that's
idea,
what they do. That is what they do.
And what's even worse, in some respects, is that was reflected in their relationship with the town of Postville. Because, for example, the Jewish attitude to the locals was pretty diabolical. Just to give you some examples, the Jews drove drunk down the high street. They drove without licenses. They didn't bother getting driving license because it doesn't apply to them, obviously. They drove on the pavement fairly regularly, often nearly mowing down people. And while on Yom Kippur, a local rabbi decided it was a great idea to probably fix loudspeakers at the top of his car and repeatedly drive up and down the main street playing Klezmer music, which is a form of Yiddish music, all night. So people didn't get any sleep that night. You can imagine that people aren't going to like the Jews very much after that. But they did things like if they went into a shopping post hill, they would not pay full price for it. They always demanded discounts. They negotiated down. They demanded that the locals give them, you know, something for nothing. Even if the local store was going to make a loss, the Jews didn't care. They wanted it cheap. They didn't care what you did. And because if you didn't do what they said, you would lose out, if you like. It was a kind of a mafia situation. And this is kind of the kind of thing that Gray, Devlin and Goldsmith just don't mention. They don't mention the nasty little things the Jews were doing or what that invariably causes among people.
Oh, my. All righty. We are going to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
An effective, 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent...
And our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And I just have a quick question from the chat room. Are these Hasidic people connected to the activities of certain Jews who are now going into the Northwest and in towns in the Northwest? And doing the same thing.
How do they mean? Well, your question is, how do you mean? Are they going into the Northwest and setting
okay,
up companies?
Apparently
and
there are several. Apparently there are several towns in the Northwest who are also have these influx of Jewish people, who are kind of taking over things.
It would probably be precisely the same groups. The reason I say that is because in order to do that, it requires a lot of organization. And the only Jewish groups who really have that kind of organization and control over their own members are the Chabadniks, and particularly the Lubavitchers. Lubavitchers are notorious for it, actually, of having a huge amount of control over their membership and making sure that they do what they're told and that they give the money back to some degree to the center. So the Lubavitch Chabad, for example, has been variously estimated the wealth in the billions. We don't know just how much they have, but it would surprise me if we're talking 2 or 3 billion plus. If you look at all the members and how wealthy their members are, I think it's probably likely. I should think they're the same people. I mean, it makes sense that they would be the same groups. I mean, the big question would be, Do they wear the fedora? Do they wear the black hats? Do they wear the all black clothing, or do they just walk around in normal clothes with skull caps on? Because if they're walking around with their skull caps on, then they're probably not Justin. Whereas if they're in all black and they're wearing the black fedora, etc., they're wearing very traditional clothes, that means they have bad nicks. It entirely depends on what's. I can't really answer the question per se, other than to say it's probably the case.
Okay.
I haven't actually heard that one before.
No. I mean, I've been to New York City, and there seems to be a lot of different kinds of Jews there. I've been to Jerusalem, and I've been to the wall and seen a lot of interesting people there.
Oh, you mean doing the wailing?
Yeah.
It's just, there's a lot of different types, and it tends to confuse people. And in some ways, it's possibly the strength of Judaism that it has so many different sects, and they all have similar interpretations of things, but they all differ on these minute details, and they're all very, very good at trying to separating themselves from each other on the minor details. So that people looking from the outside don't really understand this flurry of different sects who are having a debate around something in the Gemara, which has been going on for about 300 years, quite happily. And they will literally debate down to the point of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Dealing with these people is very difficult sometimes, because they just won't give up. They won't give up a point. Although, if you know what you're doing, you can make them look very, very stupid.
Right. All righty. So let's get... Okay, go ahead.
Get too sidetracked. So where was I? Well, I was going to quote something that Gray, Devlin, and Goldsmith said, because I think it's worth quoting, just to show how, lacking in intellectual rigor their work is in many respects. They say, for example, on April 24th, 2001, special election drew more than 50% of eligible voters in Postville. Aaron, which is Aaron Goldsmith, who did Lubavitch, of course, won handily by count of 325 to 216. Only 3% of those votes were cast by Jews. A number of the Jews living in Postville at the time were not American citizens and were therefore ineligible to vote. Incidentally, at least six of them were illegal immigrants to the USA, two from Israel, four from Ukraine. Almost all of Aaron's votes came from the Christian Postvillians. Clearly, the argument that the Jews were taking over Postville was unfounded. The election was a victory for tolerance, decency, and common sense on page 39. Now, obviously, there's a couple of things wrong with that statement, those statements. First of all, how the hell do they know who voted for who?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't say, oh yeah, it came from Christian Postvillians. Well, hang on a minute, it's a secret ballot. how can that be so? Second, so only 1,000 people were eligible to vote, and of which you've got 300 Jews who've turned up. So surely that's very, very close to the amount of people who voted for this Aaron Goldschmidt character. It's just the fact that it's clearly a stupid argument to make by any means, but it just shows, I think, that with Gray, Devlin, and Goldsmith, you're dealing with people who have got a vested interest in this, and they clearly don't want to deal with this dispassionately, or they make a lot of loud noise that they are, and that you have to be very, very careful when reading what they have to say. And in that, I think it's probably worth quoting some things from the Lubavitch of Chabad, just because I really dislike people saying that the Lubavitch are a nice group of people, because they are plainly not. For example, it's in the book Our Man in Dakar and Other Stories of Lubavitch Chereb, which is from the Chabad publisher. It says, he read and translated into English. This is from the Reb Tanya, which is his main work. Most of it was beyond me, except for one passage describing how even the lowliest of Jews would sacrifice his life for Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify God's name. That's the Jewish concept of martyrdom, by the way. And in a flash, I understand what my parents have been hollering about the whole time. Even the worst Jew is forbidden to marry a Gentile.
Oh,
then
my.
You have things like, moreover, we were worried about assimilation, how to ensure that our children remain Jews. Our unavoidable conclusion Without fostering a Jewish lifestyle at home, we were endangering our child's Judaism. They were growing up with friends and teachers who were not Jewish. And then you have others. For example, I had a friend, he told me, whose son passed away from the dreaded disease. That's Christianity, by the way. If we called them that, if we called Judaism that, they'd be screaming very, very loudly, of course. Roughly a half year later, deeply depressed, he told me that the disease had been detected in another one of his sons. At the first opportunity, I asked the referee's blessing, and he answered, "Jews have a protective wall against negative matters that separates them from non-Jews." And just to an absolute, brilliant quote is from the Liberator himself. He says, "Is there any Gentile woman worth causing your parents such suffering?" That's about intermarriage. Clearly, this group of people are not an ordinary group or sect of, you know, just, you know, oh, we just happen to worship a god kind of people. These are people with a very defined religious system that hates anyone who isn't born Jewish. They're some of the most horrific of their kind, and they actively discriminate against just about everyone. It doesn't matter if you join Judaism or not, you're still scum. For example, it says, "My brother-in-law was living in Williamsburg with one Hasidic family when one day tragedy hit. His daughter decided to marry a goy. And to add salt to the wound, not any goy, but an African-American." It's that kind of language that comes in from Hasidic publications. And this book, I should point out, was published in 2004. So, you know, how can people argue that these people are anything but basically an evil sect? Because that's what they are.
Right. Do you differentiate between the Lubavitches, the Hasidic Jewish group? Do you differentiate between them and other groups who are more secular? Are all Jews pretty much alike in certain respects? I know I have friends who say, "Oh, not all Jews are involved in this kind of, do not all have this kind of mentality." What are your comments?
First of all, it's made on an assumption about Judaism. If a Jew worships Judaism, if a Jew is active in Judaism, Judaism tells them, but with no compromises, and the only exception is Reform Judaism, and that's the most declining variant, is that it tells them that they are the special chosen people of Yahweh, that this Jewishness is passed on biologically, usually by the mother, but sometimes by the father, as I've said, and that those who are not Jewish, not born Jewish, are predisposed to lie, have sex with animals, rape Jews, women want to marry Jews, all the Gentile women want to marry Jews, all the male Gentiles want to rape Jewish women, and so on. It's not even really open to debate in some respects, because Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, conservative authorities all agree on these points, because they endorse what we call the Gemara and the Mishnah, which is what people tend to call the Talmuds. You get these statements, and they're statements which are not even, you can't even say they're taken out of context, because people like Jacob Neusner, who is the Dean of Modern Jewish Studies, has clearly commented on them, for example, that is what Judaism means, and he tries to explain away the meaning, saying that it's an allegory for something, but this isn't true, and he knows it, as he quite blatantly says in his guide to the Mishnah, that they do actually mean it quite literally. It's when people talk about the difference between secular and religious Jews, they're not differentiating the fact that when a Jew is born in a Jewish household, for example, there is a certain chip on their shoulder. And it's always been there. If you look at Jewish communists, for example, in the 1920s and 30s, when Jewishness, the Jewishness is there, but they have actively suppressed it. They still, A, identify as Jewish, and B, they frequently talk about being Jewish. And thirdly, quite a lot of people, these very secular people, they also say, "Oh, I'm Jewish, even though I don't actually have, I'm not actually affiliated to the religion." They believe in a sort of, it's the best way to put it, is that Judaism doesn't work like Christianity and Islam. It's not a religion of confession. You can convert, but if you convert, you are a lower being to Judaism, because you basically, you are classed as a Jewish soul born in a non-Jewish body. That isn't the same way as, for example, Islam, where you just say, I submit to the will of God and so forth. And Christianity, you are baptized and confirmed. It's the same principle in those two religions as each other. But with Judaism, you can't do that because it doesn't work that way. Because God has put you in a place, he's put you in a body. That must mean that at some time your Jewish soul has committed a terrible sin and thus has been reborn into a non-Jewish body as a punishment. Therefore, you take longer to go through Gemala, which is Gehenna, which is the Jewish version of purgatory. The Jews, although they do actually have a hell, it's a common mistake that they don't have a hell. They do actually have one, but it's reserved for what they call Amalek, people who oppose the Jews, without, you know, and don't learn from that apparent mistake, and who basically oppose the will of God and thus are consigned to a sort of eternal purgatory. It's just people tend to assume that because a Jew does not follow Judaism, they're any less Jewish. For example, if you find a Jew who converts to Christianity, they are still considered Jewish by Judaism, for example, because they've been born Jewish. And also, if you talk to them and say, I'm a Jewish Christian. Well, if it was just a religion, then why would you define yourself as a Jewish Christian? You don't get an atheist. You don't get a Christian atheist, do you? For example, they don't exist. So then, why do we do this? It's because Judaism is a lot more than simply a religious denomination that you can convert to and that anyone can go and join. It's an incredible religion. It's the closest you can come to how it works is Hinduism. Because of the caste system, because within Judaism, as I've explained before, there is a caste system operating where you have priests, Levites, helpers at the temple, Israelites, then you've got the Mamzers, which literally means bastards, people who are from non-Jews who are from either product of rape, copulation outside marriage, sex with Gentiles, so on. That's what you would be classed as. And then you've got converts, and you've got what we call foundlings, Jews of uncertain parentage. It's a biological religion. It's not based on confession in any way, shape or form outside of reform. And even then, reform's letter of the law is very different from the spirit of the law. Because the letter of the law says, you know, this isn't so anymore. We've updated it with liberal values. But in actuality, if you go to a Reform synagogue and you're a convert, you will be looked down upon. There is no doubt about that, and I've done it. So I've actually gone to a Reform synagogue before and pretended I was Jewish just to see what they would do, and they treated me very differently from when they thought I wasn't. I happened to do that because there used to be a Reform synagogue right next to my university, so it was a kind of handy little experiment.
Yes, indeed. I have also visited a synagogue, and I was there I was teaching some quilting kinds of things, and this guild hired me, and they met in a local synagogue, and oh my goodness, these people are just very cliquish and would not even speak to me until after I had gotten up and given my presentation. And I had tried to be friendly with them before I gave my presentation, which was about an hour long. And then I sat back down, and this lady next to me said, oh, we would have talked to you if we had known who you were.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, my wife has visited an Orthodox synagogue in New York City before. And she went there primarily. She went there and sat in the back, and a lot of Jews were staring at her because she was sitting among the men. Because in Orthodox synagogues, you split the male and female. So women are behind the curtain, men are in front, and they were staring at her for ages. And she just said, "I'm a Catholic observer. I'm here to watch. Carry on." And they just stared
at
her.
Wow.
it just really, it didn't go down well, and she just laughed and left in the end. But it goes to show that these people, you know, if a Jew went to a church and sat in the back, it wouldn't matter. No one would think any the wiser. They'd just say, okay, well, you do what you want to do. We do what we want to do. Fine. You do that, you go to a mosque, it'd be pretty much the same.
Indeed.
But yeah, synagogue different.
Alrighty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the 5-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay. All the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley. An area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pick up at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Keravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Keravim? Simple. Keravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to teravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Keravim, the best supplements on earth.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. All righty, please continue from where we left off.
Okay. We were talking about some of the aspects of the case. First, I mean, it's probably, I haven't mentioned this yet, but the fact that it was a kosher meat park didn't stop the animal abuses of animals that went on. The organization PETA, as in PETA, has published videos of its employees who infiltrated the plant and found... They repeatedly filmed cows having their throats ripped out using industrial hooks. So someone got, you know, a hook you'd haul cargo up with. They had basically Guatemalans with these hooks ripping out and throw it to animals and just leaving the animal to bleed on the floor for 3 or 4 minutes, you know, and then coming back to it, in order to processing. And these videos, among there's quite a few of them, are really, really horrific. And if you have a strong stomach and you want to understand what was going on, I would watch them. If you don't have a strong stomach, I wouldn't watch them because they are really quite stomach turning, even for someone who isn't perhaps so hot on animal rights.
I started to watch one of those once, and I couldn't deal with it. I just it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen.
It's absolutely disgusting by any means. I mean, the worst thing about it is that Dagger Christ has got away with it for so long. From 1987 to 2008, they got away with it year upon year upon year. And there isn't any doubt this has been going on for quite some time. One of the, a Jewish expert in this kosher practice was Temple Grandin, who came in 2006 and said, oh yes, it was all wonderful. And then in 2008, suddenly this had all changed to they're the worst plant ever. It's a kind of thing that you can see the corruption going through the Jewish community and how they are then corrupting the community around them, by, you know, offering lots of money. You know, if you'll work with us, then we'll give you lots of money. We'll buy you a new car. You'll have no problems. You'll be set up for the rest of your life. Some of the aspects of it that aren't so well known are the fact that several of the agri-processor managers are still on the run. One of them in particular is called Zeev Levy has been on the run since 2008, and he's currently in Israel as far as the Department of Homeland Security can work out. Of course, if this had been an American criminal who'd gone to Israel to commit a crime, then I'm sure the American authorities would have actually found him within 4 years if they had such a small country to deal with. He is known to have stolen tens of millions of dollars with him, and he was actually in charge of the poultry end of the operation. So he was in charge of the slaughtering of chickens. So, you know, not exactly the nicest chap in the world.
Amazing. Alrighty, we are going to our 60-second top-of-the-hour break. We will be right back after station ID and a word from our sponsor. Stay tuned.